Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Let Me Explain You a Thing. My name is Andrew, and this is the podcast where I talk extemporaneously on a subject I know a decent amount about, usually on my drive to work, although today I am recording from the home studio. So apologies for cat noise. But no, I could never apologize for Nutmeg. Oh, did you hear her? She's here. She's hanging. But anyway, today I thought I would give you guys a tour of my Magic the Gathering Commander decks. Commander is my favorite way to play Magic, and I have, at the time of recording, 10 Commander decks. I have also retired a lot of Commander decks over time, so maybe that'll be a different episode, but for today, we're just going to talk about the decks that I currently have in service and what makes them tick, what are some major themes, what I like playing, what I like about them. So let's just start it off. I'm going to try to get through all 10 in a normal length podcast. So first and oldest of my continuously operative commander decks is a deck I call Knights Valiant, and it is helmed by Firia, Judge of Valor. So Firia is an angel from Kaldheim, one of the Valkyrie, and she is a 5-mana, 2/4 legendary angel cleric, has flying and lifelink, and whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you do, I forget what the spell is called, but you look at the top three cards of your library, you put one into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. And that enables you to do some really neat, like, digging. And it's a knight type deck, first and foremost. There are maybe a couple other small sub-themes in there. It also kind of started as, well, going back to the way beginning, this iteration of the deck started as kind of a Orzhov Spellslinger deck. It's a little unusual. So what I realized trying to build knights, originally I started with Abzan. I tried that for like literally years with a number of different Abzan commanders, and ultimately settled on cutting it down just to Orzhov and settled on Firia, even though there are legitimate white-black knight-type commanders, such as, I'm blanking on the name, but she is actually not in this deck. I'm going to hear my clicky-clack a little bit. Ariel, Knight of Windgrace. Yeah, I did not end up putting Ariel in the deck. Well, she made an earlier cut, but I've had to make some hard sacrifices. Because as it turns out, there are a lot of really strong knights in white, and there are also some super compelling ones in black. So, first and foremost, we've got some great knight anthems, like Knight Exemplar gives all your other knights +1/+1 and indestructible. There's also Kinsbale Cavalier, which gives all your knights double strike. That is super powerful, especially once you get a bunch of anthems going, which is kind of one of the sub-themes of the deck. Another MVP, we've got Mirror Entity, which is cheating just a little bit because it is a changeling. So it's technically a knight as well as everything else. However, Mirror Entity, you get to a point later in the game where you've got like 7 mana. You just dump it into Mirror Entity, make all your creatures 7/7s. And all the anthem effects and creature abilities and buff that you have going also, you know, still apply. But what I like about Firia for this deck is there are a lot of knights. There are some knights that are good higher on the curve, like Sir Conrad the Grim, 5 mana. And he pings everyone when a creature dies or a creature goes to a graveyard from anywhere other than the battlefield, or a creature card leaves your graveyard. And he can also set up a little self-mill there as well to kind of grease the wheels. But, you know, there's some higher curve knights, certainly. This deck has a single card at 6, and that is Silverwing Squadron. I find it's just a really effective way of building up a board, come back really strong from a board wipe. But mostly, we top out at 5. And there are some high curve knights, but a lot of them tend to be at 2 and 3. For instance, we've got Knight of Meadowgrain, which is kind of, you know, might not feel very well positioned for commander. It's a 2-2 with first strike and lifelink for 2 mana. But those creature abilities really help once we can start adding anthem effects that give all my knights +1/+1 or whatever. There's also a handful of fun kind of synergies that sometimes don't go off, but when they do, such as Hack on Stromgald Scourge, which is a 3-mana black zombie knight that you can't cast from your hand, only from the graveyard. And as long as he is on the battlefield, you can play other knight cards from your graveyard. So Furia, of course, does a lot of self-mill, essentially, by letting you choose one card, whichever card is most useful from your top three, but the rest go to the bin. There's a lot of good, not exactly reanimation, because reanimation tends to be more concerned with larger creatures, unless it's mass reanimation, which I don't think I have now. Oh, I do have Living Death, which exchanges all the everybody's, it's kind of a board wipe, but it just exiles all creatures on the battlefield. You return, and everybody returns all creatures from their graveyard to the battlefield, and then all the cards that were exiled originally go to the graveyard. So you kind of trade all creatures in graveyards with the battlefield. This can get really great once we, you know, Furia triggers up to every player's turn if we're able to continue, like, casting small cantrips, such as, what's a fun one? There's a lot of removal because we're in white-black. I also have stuff like Reprieve. Reprieve returns a spell to its owner's hand and draws you a card. It's kind of like Remand, but in white. And that is actually really fun if you can reprieve your own spell. And if you have the mana to do this on multiple turns, you cast that original spell. It's not going to resolve because you reprieve it. So you draw a card off Reprieve. Reprieve would go to your graveyard. But the other spell comes back to your hand, and you've replaced it with a new one, and you've drawn a card, essentially, with Furia. I don't know. There's just a lot of, like, low-mana creatures, low-mana mana rocks, and some good enchantments, like Knight's Charge pings every opponent whenever you attack with a knight. Rally the Ranks, just a 2-mana anthem for knights. Same with Etchings of the Chosen. Campaign of Vengeance is one that I'm trying out. It's 5-mana, but kind of similar to Knight's Charge in effect. And Spear of Heliod is another anthem for 3-mana that can also destroy creatures that deal damage to you. So yeah, it's kind of low to the ground. One thing that can be really satisfying is playing Furia on, you know, say you get a mana rock down, you play her on turn 5, but you have an extra mana available, so you then, you know, play a, I don't know, like a Forsworn Paladin or something, follow that up, and Furia sees you cast that second spell of your turn, so you just draw a card right away. And yeah, there's a lot of interaction in this deck. It feels really nice to play. You know, it's going to win by combat, but it is reasonably good at doing that. Just going wide with, like, tokens and little guys that get big and scary. So that's my knight deck. Moving on, we've got Spirit Bomb, which is my Kalamax deck. Spirit Bomb refers to the attack from Dragon Ball Z. This is kind of, the flavor of it is a little bit Dragon Ball Z oriented, because it's almost like we're doing a Kaioken or something to buff ourselves up, It's basically a Spellslinger Voltron deck. So Kalamax is a teamer that's green, blue, red commander, 4-mana, 4/4 elemental dinosaur. Copies the first instant you cast each turn if Kalamax is tapped when you cast it. And whenever you copy an instant, you get a +1/+1 on Kalamax. There are some spells like Unleash Fury, which is 2-mana instant in red, double the power of target creature until end of turn. There's some similar ones like 2-weapon fighting. Or sorry, no, the spell is Choose Your Weapon. You choose between 2-weapon fighting and archery. It's from the D&D set. And 2-weapon fighting, which is basically the only one I choose ever, it doubles target creature's power and toughness for the turn. I think there might be one more in here, but it's not occurring to me. Anyway, so you use those. If you have just a couple counters on Kalamax and somebody makes the mistake of not blocking, people can accidentally die from basically full health and zero commander damage because Kalamax gets a counter. You cast like Unleash Fury or Choose Your Weapon, whichever. Kalamax, after attackers have been declared, Kalamax sees that, copies it, and you get to put a counter on him before either of the either the original spell or the copy resolves. So he gets +1/+1, and then you double him, and then you double him again. So the very first time you're doing that, you get to 20 commander damage. I mean, 20 damage, that can just kill people on its own. If you have that's supposing this is the first time you're attacking with Kalamax, like turn 5, turn 4, if you get a little ramp going. I've got like the Signets and some other rocks. So, you know, that, like, the very second time you're able to attack, you can threaten lethal. As long as he has one other counter on him already, then you're good to go. The other thing is, it's the first instant spell you cast each turn. So as long as you have him tapped, i.e. from attacking on your turn, every other turn around the circle, you can cast an instant on somebody else's turn. He gets a counter, he copies the spell. Some of them are just kind of general utility. Master's Rebuke, Lightning Bolt, stuff like that. Just, you know, Nature's Claim. Really cheap, effective instance that let you, remove trouble permanents or deal with, annoying creatures. I will say, this deck is incredibly creature light. Right now I have kind of a mini dinosaur theme going. There's like Otapec Huntmaster, which gives dinosaurs, can give dinosaurs haste and makes them cost one less to cast. So that's, you know, if I'm only using that to ramp out Kalamax on turn 3, that's fine. And get him attacking immediately, even if I will then be tapped out and won't be able to take advantage. You know, that gets the commander damage juices flowing. So very small dinosaur theme. I might pull that. It's kind of something that I've been experimenting with since Lost Caverns of Ixalan, but we'll see. Leap of Flame is really great. Any card with Replicate, that's an instant. Kalamax doesn't care if his own ability copied the instant to get a counter. Whenever you copy an instant spell to any effect through any means, he gets a +1/+1. So Leap of Flame, you can, you know, play and copy twice. He's going to get +3/+0 flying in first strike, but then also +4/+0 flying in first strike and 3+1/+1 counters. So that's 7 power right there and evasion. So, some other fun ones like Monomorphos and Snap that both either add mana are kind of like rituals, or Snap, in this case, you return a creature to its owner's hand and you untap up to 2 lands. You can use Snap or Monomorphos to come out, you know, ahead on mana, which is really strong. There's lots of little, like, kind of utility spells in here. Fling is a great way to finish someone off if you've like attacked one player for lethal with, you know, choose your weapon, and Calamax has like 25 power and you can just end the game by like throwing him at somebody else. It is totally a glass cannon, and we do run a good amount of protection for Calamax. There's Tyvar's Stand, which can be a pump spell, but also for a single green can give Hexproof and Indestructible for the turn. Let's see, Tamiyo's Safekeeping, pretty much the same thing. So there's a lot of stuff like that, but yeah, this deck I've had for quite a while, and it's a goofy deck. Like, it's not doing anything really conventional, and it's not really trying to interact with the opponent's game other than like removing blockers and stuff like that, but it's a fun deck. I've thought about changing it or taking it apart a number of times, and it's just, it stayed with me. Okay, so next, let's move on to In the Mouth of Madness. This commander deck is led by Olivia, Mobilized for War. It's a black-red vampire type deck. Olivia is a 3-mana vampire knight. She's a 3-3 with flying, and whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you can discard a card. And if you do, you get a +1/+1 counter on the creature, and it gains haste for the turn, and it becomes a vampire permanently, in addition to its other types. So I've used this rather effectively with other creatures that might not be vampires. Like, it helps you kind of get over that hurdle of, you know, normally when you play a typal deck, you need a lot of creatures that are of that type to work with your synergy pieces, your, you know, captivating vampires, whatever, Champion of Dusk, Bloodline Keeper. But in this case, as long as I have a card to pitch, I can play like Archfiend of Ifnir, which is just a terribly scary card in this deck. We're doing a lot of discarding, so it will put a lot of -1/-1 counters on my opponent's stuff and kind of keep them off the board if left unchecked. Cardur Doomscourge. Gix Yawgmoth Praetor. Garna Bloodfist of Keld. Kind of all stuff that I am really excited to be doing anyway, but just the fact that I can make them vampires, make them hasty, like Shieldred Whispering One, it's really nice. Playing into those synergies, but not needing every synergy creature to be a vampire. There's one kind of tech card that I have in here is Surly Badgersaur. I think this was originally printed in Commander 2020 for the cycling deck in Jeskai, but I have it here. It's a 4-mana 3-3 red badger dinosaur. And when you discard a creature card, it gets a +1/+1 counter. When you discard a land, you create a treasure. And when you discard a non-creature non-land, Surly Badgersaur gets to fight something. So, you know, you play Surly Badgersaur, like, on curve after Olivia. You discard a card to make it a 4-4 vampire with haste. And then if you, you know, depending on what you discard, you're either getting a treasure or you're making it a 5-5. Or you get to fight something with that 4-4 and then also swing. And of course, you know, the longer you have this guy out, the better it is. I've also got Mishra Claimed by Gix and Phyrexian Dragon Engine, just on the off chance I can meld Gix and make Mishra Claimed by Gix. Sorry, no, that's the front side. Make Mishra Lost to Phyrexia. Just, you know, goofy, exciting stuff like that. There's Magus of the Wheel, which is nice to give haste to for the turn. You get to wheel and refill your hand, which is necessary. You do have to be kind of judicious about when you discard. Not every creature you play is going to need to get the discard +1/+1 counter haste and vampire treatment. sometimes it just doesn't make sense to swing, you know, immediately that turn. So there's a lot of fun stuff in this that you wouldn't necessarily think of, but because I've played the deck since like 2019, I have thought of. Like Tawashi Guidebot, it's a 4-mana 2/1 artifact creature. It enters and puts a +1/+1 counter on a creature, and you can pay 4 and tap it to draw a card, but it's the ability costs 1 less for each modified creature you control. So at a certain point, it's just tap, draw a card. Tenured Inkcaster is a vampire that cares about creatures you control with +1/+1s attacking. I've got stuff like Feldon of the Third Path. Just some kind of, you know, graveyard-y stuff. Deathless Ancient is a 6-mana 4/4 vampire knight with flying. And you can tap 3 untapped vampires to return it from your graveyard to your hand. This is in here not because that's a great beater. It's not. It's not very efficient. But it is terrific when you are able to discard it repeatedly to Olivia's effect. And then, of course, I've got Squee Goblin Nabob in here because he comes back to your hand every upkeep. He's just a free discard every turn. So this deck started as an Anya Falconwrath, as the Madness Commander deck from Commander 2019. And at some point, I was very slow to update this deck. We did kind of a challenge, myself and the friends who all got those commander decks that year. We did this challenge where we were only able to substitute out 5 cards per game, I think, and there was also a budget limit to what we could change. So there were some things that I, you know, took out fairly early. Some cards ended up making their way back in. Like Magus of the Wheel, I think, was in the original list, and I cut him for a little bit. But I have like a really detailed change log. At some point, I think in 2021, you know, we were playing this through COVID, like kind of on Cockatrice. And at some point I was like, you know, this deck has changed a good bit. I've changed the commander by now. Let's just call this exercise done and dusted. So I did. And, you know, at this point I just make little changes here and there. It has changed pretty significantly, but it was a fun way to play for a little bit to, you know, not get a pre-con, be like, I like this commander or this theme, and I like these like 10 really powerful cards in here, but everything else is going to go. I'm going to like scrap a ton of this. So yeah, it was kind of nice. I found through this deck that I really enjoy playing Rakdos. You do have to kind of cover for your enchantment weakness. Like I've got Feed the Swarm, which is removal for creatures or enchantments, more recently in black. You know, they said they were going to put enchantment removal in black, and we really haven't seen much of it yet. So, however, I do have a good amount of artifact removal and stuff like Liquid Metal Torque. That's a mono rock, but it can also turn a permanent into an artifact. So you can, like, do Liquid Metal Torque and Shenanigans, which is Shatter, but it has Dredge 1. So, you know, stuff like that. Anyway. So that is In the Mouth of Madness. Next up, we've got Castle in the Sky. That is a white-blue flying and foretell and aura deck helmed by Brago. And it is, I would say, definitely a blink deck as well. So Brago, King Eternal, is a 4-mana, 2/4 Azorius Flying Spirit, and whenever he hits a player, you can blink any number of target non-land permanents you control, so you just exile them and they come right back. because it's any number of non-land permanents, I have a good amount of mono rocks in this deck that come in untapped. So you can kind of, like, it's got to be, you know, you spend your mana before combat, and then Brago gets in, hits, you untap your mono rocks. But you can kind of get a second wind where you have access to, you know, your Gilded Lotus or your Soul Ring, Arcane Signet, all that for round two. Now, this deck, I think every creature in here... Yeah, I believe every single creature in here has flying. Some of them benefit you playing creatures with flying, like Watcher of the Spheres and Warden of Evos Isle, that discount your flying creature spells by one. There's also stuff like Tide Skimmer that... And where's that Sphinx? That when you... Windreader Sphinx. When you attack with flyers, you draw cards. So there's a reason for it, but I also just find that flying is really great. Like, okay, unlike with creature type synergies, flying synergies, you don't really need to have that much in the deck for it to still be noticeably worthwhile. Like, flying does something in and of itself, whereas being, you know, a bird does not, unless you have cards that care about that. But flying Typal is, it's just great because, like, a lot of people are, I've found, are underprepared for blocking flyers. Like, they think, oh, I'll just, like, get, you know, have some, like, creature removal or have, like, a couple cards with creatures with reach or something. And, like, that only goes so far. You know, if all my creatures have flying, that's going to pose a problem for a lot of decks. So, what are some other key cards? I've got fun ones like Spotter Thopter, which is a big artifact creature flying. And it has a smaller form you can cast as a prototype. Thing is, when you blink this guy, he comes back in as the, like, 8 mana version, which is a 4/5 flyer instead of a 2/3. And for that matter, when he enters, you scry X, where X is his power. So you get to look deeper into your deck. There's also, you know, just the classics like Moldrifter and Cloud Blazer. Just creatures that let you... like, do stuff you want to do, gain life, draw cards for them entering. Even Gagglemaster, which I've been on the verge of cutting, but is just too cute. Yeah, Augury Owl is fun. Archon of Redemption is a Flying Matters card that gains life equal to the entering creature's power. So, this is a blink deck. Brago is the only real source of blink in the deck. It functions totally fine without it. I know blink is also kind of protection, and sometimes it's useful to have instant speed blink, but I've got some good protection apart from that. This deck also leans pretty heavily into Foretell. I don't know how it ended up that way. It just kind of did. I've got Vega the Watcher and some other stuff that cares about you casting spells from exile or having things enter from exile, i.e. by blink. Such as Extraordinary Journey, which is a really neat enchantment from Wilds of Eldraine. You can blink. Well, no, not really. You can kind of exile, sort of bounce into exile creatures when you, you know, by paying more for the X portion of Extraordinary Journey's cost. But it also draws you a card whenever one or more non-token creatures enter the battlefield or from exile, or if they were cast from exile. So I also have a number of auras like Prison Sentence, Grasp of Fate, some like Oblivion Ring kind of stuff, but also pacifism sort of things. Faith's Feathers, which is a pacifism that also gains 4 life on entry. Fall from Favor, which is a passive or a what's the like charmed sleep kind of tap down blue aura that also gets me the Monarch when it comes in. So lots of cards like this that benefit from being blinked, but also the really neat thing about your auras getting blinked is you can put them on a different creature. As long as that creature isn't also entering with Brago, it needs to already be there. But most of these are detrimental auras, like Eaten by Piranhas makes it a 1/1 black skeleton with no abilities. So it's neat that I can kind of move them around at need. I can also blink like Teferi's Moat to choose a different color. It prevents creatures of the chosen color without flying from attacking you. That's an enchantment. So, yeah, this is a really fun deck. It is kind of mid-rangey. Like, you got to get Brago going, and you just kind of grind people out with your incredible value, just drawing so many cards, gaining so much life. But it's fun. I like it. Next, we've got a deck I call L'Estasi dell'Oro, which is the Ecstasy of Gold, the theme from, one of those spaghetti westerns. Ennio Morricone composed it. And this is this is a goofy deck, too. Huh. Theme. It's a Naya All Gold Legends Matter deck. So every single card in this deck is hybrid or two or more colors. The deck altogether is Naya. Most creatures in the deck are legendary. There's a good number that are not. We've got like Kasali Pride Mage, Steward of Valoran, Voice of Resurgence, Goblin Anarchomancer, stuff like that. But, and, you know, some cards that I don't think I'll ever be able to cut, like Knight of New Alara gives other multicolor creatures +1/+1 for each of their colors. But apart from that, we've got a ton of legendaries. I don't think it really matters for anything other than Hajar, Loyal Bodyguard, which can sacrifice to give your legendary creatures +1/+0 and indestructible for the turn. This deck, I haven't mentioned the commander yet because it's not the most important. Right now I have Jared Carthalion, True Heir, who is a Naya 3/3, enters the battlefield, makes an opponent the Monarch, but you can't gain the Monarch this turn. And so it puts Monarch into the game, but kind of points at somebody else and says, go get him. As long as you have the Monarch and Jared Carthalion is dealt damage, the damage gets prevented and turned into +1/+1 counters instead for him, which is neat. You know, this deck is kind of just like fun holding myself to this goofy restriction of all multicolor. And there's kind of a trample sub-theme in here. We've got, like, Quartzwood Crasher, Proud Wild Bonder, which gives all creatures you have with trample kind of the Thorn Elemental, like, I'm going to force all my damage through ability. Yeah, it used to be helmed long ago. My first real commander deck that stuck was built around Rith the Rith the Awakener. Rith is still in the deck. It's just a little slow for contemporary commander because you got this 6-mana dragon that has to hit a player, and then you have to pay 3, and then you make a sapperling for each permanent of the color of your choice on the battlefield. Which is great, and it goes, you know, It goes off. I forget what the word is. It's non-linear, though. Rith is great. I tried it with Rien for a long time. Rien was kind of the reason that it's an all gold deck. She's an angel that gives all your multicolored creatures +1/+0 and returns them to your hand at the end of the turn when they die, which is really neat. But I think I wanted to try something a little different. I was leaning a little bit more into the sacrifice for value kind of angle of this, or like attack really aggressively, who cares if things die. But it was just a little slow. So I think Jared being 3 mana and putting the Monarch onto the field right away is neat. I enjoy that aspect of the deck. Will it ever be all legendary creatures? Probably not. There's also like 52 creatures in the deck. There are like 10 non-creature, non-land spells. All multicolor. But yeah, it's a goofy deck. It feels like an homage to the original Rith deck in that it's just kind of like all epic, all heroes, all multicolor. These are things that I love in Magic, so. So yeah, I'm going to try to move a little faster. I've got an elf deck, which is one of my more unique brews. I call it Ballad of the Two Nations, and the commander is Jahira, Friend of the Forest, one of the background choosers from Baldur's Gate, and she lets your tokens all tap for a green. She's a half-elf druid. And I've got two backgrounds that I can pair with her. One is Inspiring Leader, a white background that gives your creature tokens +2/+2. And the other is Agent of the Iron Throne, which is a black background that whenever an artifact or creature you control goes to the graveyard, each opponent loses a life. So one is kind of like, they're both token-oriented with Jahira. And the way this deck works is I have a core green deck that is like 65 maybe green spells, mono green spells and mono green lands. And we've got a lot of hits from, you know, that you would expect for an elf deck. Morrowind the Nurturer, Kindred Summons, Sylvan Library, just a great card. Well-Wisher, Wolverine Riders, just scrolling through. Yeah, like lots of little monodorks. Imperius Perfect, Azuri Renegade Leader, Elvish Warmaster, Elvish Archdruid, Beast Whisperer, just a ton of stuff that loves you playing lots of creatures, making a lot of creature tokens, doing green stuff, ramping, just an absolute fuck ton. And Azuri is a great win con because each instance of 5 mana you can pay, Azuri gives all your elves +3/+3 and trample for the turn. So great way to just close out a game when you have a ton of mana. So that's kind of the core green deck. And then I shuffle together with that either a white 33 cards or a black 33 cards. You know, spells of the appropriate color and lands of the appropriate color. And so it's kind of like mostly green, but either white or black sub-theme deck. So the green-black version is we're going to make a lot of tokens, but we're going to try to sacrifice them for value, kind of more of an aristocrats kind of thing. The black one sub-deck is kind of finding its feet. It also cares about the graveyard somewhat. We've got like Underrealm Lich, Kaga, Shadow Archdruid, Jared, Golgari, Lich Lord, and Deadbridge Chant. But there's also, I don't know, just some really great spells in here, like Moldervine Reclamation, Lathril, Blade of the Elves. So ways that you can turn all your elves into like life gain or card draw or, you know, burning your opponents to death. So that's kind of the Jaehaera plus Agent of the Iron Throne strategy. And then Jaehaera plus Inspiring Leader, the plan is more you're going to make a lot of tokens and they're going to be big. You're just, you know, going wide. Like, Jaehaera makes all your tokens tap for green. Inspiring Leader makes Jaehaera make all your creature tokens plus two, plus two. So you combine that with, like, Elvish Archdruid or Azuri, and, you know, you got a bunch of big elves. Elvish Warmaster, they just keep coming. Priest of Titania, a beloved card, taps for a green for each elf on the battlefield. Elf is not an uncommon type. If you're playing somebody else in green, they might be helping you a little bit there. So yeah, this deck is definitely one of my more experimental and weird, and I like it a lot. It's maybe a little bit unfocused because the green deck has to kind of work with the white and the black, and white and black are pulling in a little bit different directions, but it's fun. I'm tuning it, but I'm pretty happy with it. I think right now the green-white deck is a little bit stronger, but that could change. Who knows? I just thought there's, like, you want to build an elf deck. There's so many powerful elves in the game. There's so many powerful elf commander options even. And you can do it in mono green. Every elf deck is going to want green. But I just wanted to, because I really love elves in fantasy as well, I just wanted to explore all the different ways, you know, you can play elves. And I was even thinking, like, what if I make, like, a little sub deck for red and for blue also? Because we now have, like, a bunch of green-blue elves from Lord of the Rings, but didn't end up doing that, at least not yet. Okay, so next we've got Faded Plastic, which is my Shorakai deck. Shorakai is a white-blue vehicle. It's an 8-8 once you crew it for 8 power. And you can pay 1 and tap to draw 2 cards, then discard a card and create a 1-1 pilot token that can crew vehicles as though its power were 2 greater. So this deck, I know this started as a precon as well. I don't buy a ton of precons, and I historically have not. I think I have had 4 precons in my Commander precons in my Magic playing life. The Teemer Mirror Mastery from Commander 2011, the Mono Green Fraile deck from Guided by Nature from 2014, the Madness deck from 2019 I mentioned, and then Shorakai from Neon Dynasty, and that was a gift. But anyway, so I know you can build Shorakai as a really powerful, like, infinite combo kind of value engine thing. This is a vehicles matter deck. It's heavily focused on artifacts and getting Shorakai out, filtering your hand, seeing a lot of cards, getting big vehicles like Sky Sovereign, Console Flagship, or Parhelion 2 into your graveyard, and then reanimating them. We got, like, Argivian Restoration, Refurbish, Open the Vaults, Repair and Recharge, all ways that we can get artifacts from our graveyard back to the battlefield. So, and then the pilot tokens, having a steady stream of pilots is terrific, because almost every vehicle other than Shorakai, every vehicle in the deck can be crewed with no more than 2 pilots. There are a lot of crew 1 through 3 costs, and beyond that, like, Parhelion 2 has crew 4, so that's 2 pilots. And then there's, like, Colossal Plow, which has crew 6. I don't think they get higher than that. There's a lot of real great value at crew 3. So, yeah, basically, just play a lot of artifacts. Play vehicles. Vehicles are terrific because they shrug off sorcery speed creature removal and board wipes. One thing I have in the deck is a lot of, like, Hour of Reckoning, Slaughter the Strong, Supreme Verdict is kind of different, but I guess, is it just those? Just those now? I guess Cyclonic Rift is in the deck. My one copy. Yeah, I guess I used to have more. But you do dig a lot, so Slaughter the Strong or Hour of Reckoning is not going to seriously impact your pilots. So you can board wipe, you keep your pilots or most of them, and then you can crew and then attack onto an empty board. So that's kind of the move. And then we've also got Urza, Lord Protector, who also melds with the Meek Stone and the Might Stone and the Weak Stone. There's also kind of like a Power Stone sub theme in here. We have lots of artifact spells and artifact costs, like Shorakai costs one to activate. And a lot of artifact synergies, like Dispatch exiles a creature if you control three or more artifacts for a single mana. Plated Onslaught is like a neat kind of go wide, I'm going to kill you this turn sort of effect that has affinity for artifacts. Some new stuff came out with Lost Caverns of Ixalan, like the Indomitable, which is a 4-mana blue 6/6 vehicle with trample. Crew 3, that's the sweet spot. Whenever a creature you control hits a player, you draw a card, and you can cast it from your graveyard as long as you control 3 or more tapped pirates and or vehicles. So, check. Got the 3 or more tapped vehicles, probably. This deck is pretty strong, in spite of like not being the optimal build for Shorakai, certainly, and being a little like goofily into the artifact theme. We've got stuff like Filigree Angel, which enters the battlefield and gains 3 life for each artifact you control. SRAM draws you a card whenever you cast a vehicle. And Steelfin Whale has affinity for artifacts, and whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, you untap it. So, you know, who would have known, but this whale makes a great pilot. So, I like this deck. I normally, like, for a long time, held myself to not using, like, to only having one deck in a single discrete color combination. This was my second Azorius deck. I think I like Azorius, guys. I'm sorry. I'm toxic, I guess. I'm controlling. Next deck on is Bottle Grotto. Reference to Link's Awakening, an early 90s Game Boy Zelda game. The commander is Kirdan the Shipwright. Kirdan is a 5-mana, 3/4 elf noble. He's Simic, so this is a blue-green deck. He's got vigilance. When he enters or attacks, each player secretly votes for a player, then the votes are revealed. Basically, everyone draws a card for each vote they get, and if someone doesn't get a vote, they get to plop a permanent from their hand onto the battlefield. So you're kind of thinking, like, who do I want to feed cards to? The sweet spot is giving someone just one card to prevent them from putting a thing from their hand down. But maybe they're playing on an empty hand. Maybe they're top decking and you don't need to vote for them. Giving them cards would be worse. But you kind of, there's some mind games in it. So far, nobody that I've played with has been trying to like really game it and make deals about this. We're all just kind of deciding on our own and then we reveal the votes. It's been a ton of fun. Usually the way I do this is I encourage everyone to like point up, and then we go 3, 2, 1, point to someone, you know, sharply and at the same time. And that's worked really well. That's better than like having to write something down and then reveal it, and everybody sees instantaneously who got votes, and then we process that. What's also neat is it can be like, this is when he's attacking, it triggers, so it's before damage is dealt. So occasionally a new creature enters the battlefield, joins combat, and or, you know, players get their hands somewhat refilled, and that can throw a wrench in things. But it doesn't matter too much, because the plan with this deck is group hug. I have a lot of cards that generally benefit the whole table, and people are really happy to see me cast them and to keep me around, because that's how you get your Rites of Flourishing. Rites of Flourishing, an enchantment that it lets everybody draw an additional card on their draw step and also play an additional land each turn. Also got Heartbeat of Spring that adds an additional mana for each land tapped. And other cards like Upwelling that prevents mana from leaving mana pools at the end of phases and turns. Got like Tidal Barracuda that gives all spells for every player flash, just not on my turn. And some stuff like Collective Voyage, Minds Aglow, that allow everyone, their joined forces spells that allow everyone to pay mana into them to allow everyone to ramp that many lands out of their deck or draw that many cards. And there's some other stuff like Gore Moldrak, Hunted Troll, that can give people Gore Moldrak, Amphinologist, and Hunted Troll. Those are separate cards. Gore Moldrak is not a Hunted Troll. But those can give other players tokens. And part of why that's relevant is that this is also an Undercity deck, an initiative deck, in other words. So I've got maybe like 8 or 10 cards that can take the initiative. Typically want to mulligan kind of aggressively to find them, because I want it out every game, and my commander doesn't do that on his own. So cards like Undermountain Adventurer that let you take the initiative when they enter the battlefield. And I have an oversized dungeon token for the Undercity, which is the dungeon that you venture into specifically. And I like trying to encourage everybody to get on that board. My previous name for this deck was Diddy Kong Racing, because it just kind of felt like we're all just little monkeys driving cars, trying to lap each other on this silly game board that I'm making everyone play with. And, you know, most people are willing to go with it. I know with some dungeon decks like Sephiroth, you just want to loop the dungeon infinitely to like do the like Lost Mines of Phandelver, target player loses a life or whatever, and just, you know, kill the table that way. This is not that deck. And I also don't want to keep the initiative too cutthroat. I will give it up if someone wants to attack me and take it. Because on the one hand, other people having it means they will be attacking each other for it. And on the other, it's just fun. I want to share some of the benefits here. Of course, the goal, because this is a group hug deck, is not to like tie the game or to get second place. But you do want to win. So eventually I want to find some way to break parity. Lots of cards like Heartwood Storyteller, and I've got a Rule Zero Kibo Uktabi Prince in. Technically it's a Gruul card, but most people let me play it in the Simic deck. I've never encountered somebody who doesn't, because it might as well just tap for green for me. But, you know, making banana tokens, Fecundity, drawing cards for people when their creatures die. Everyone is a fan of these things. So yeah, this is Bottle Grotto. Next up, we've got the Two Towers, which is my Sauron the Dark Lord deck. This is the Sauron that is Grixis, 3 colors, and appears in the main set of Lord of the Rings, Adventures in Middle-earth or whatever. And it is 6 mana for a 7/6 Avatar Horror. It's got this just fearsome ward ability that they have to sacrifice a legendary artifact or legendary creature as an additional cost to target Sauron, which deters a lot of targeting. And whenever an opponent casts a spell, I amass orcs 1. And whenever an army I control hits a player, the ring tempts me, and whenever the ring tempts me, I can discard my hand to draw new four cards. So, a few themes here that I'm leaning deeply into. One is Exile. I tried an Exile deck under Faldorn in red-green. It was like a werewolf deck for some reason. And I also tried an Exile deck in Jeskai, and it was just super busy and kind of miserable to play and to play against, so I scrapped that. This is my third attempt at an Exile deck. Brago kind of also does it, as I mentioned, with like Vega the Watcher and all the Foretell in that deck. But Sauron gets in on the game too. Part of the fun is like using your impulse draw spells, like light up the stage, and then you can pretty freely like get a ring tempts you trigger, have Sauron discard your hand, and any impulse drawn cards that have been exiled are, you know, not there to be discarded, so you're kind of like banking those, but you know, you still draw the four new ones. That's some good dig. And there's also a lot of Cast from Exile Matters type stuff in the deck, in Grixis colors, like Mizzix Replica Rider and Nalfeshni, which copies spells you cast from exile. There's Keeper of Secrets that burns people for casting from exile. What else? Wild Magic Sorcerer gives your first spell cast from exile each turn Cascade, which is neat. I've also got kind of a sacrifice theme going on. There's stuff like Havoc Jester and Mayhem Devil that ping target any target when something gets sacrificed. And I've got a lot of treasure, too. There's like also Jury, Master of the Review, gets bigger when I sacrifice things and deals more damage when they die. And Sauron, you know, completely unassisted, can make, you know, multiple bodies for sacrifice by amassing orcs one. Obviously, you know, the more amass you get with one army out already, it's just going to get taller. You won't make more tokens. But it's still pretty neat because you can, you know, amass without doing anything, just on your opponent's turn for them playing the game. You amass a little bit, you can, if you have a free sac outlet, sometimes that means getting like 3 to 5 triggers, you know, not on your turn, just while you're waiting for the table to pass back to you, which is kind of nuts. And apart from that, we've also got a lot of treasure producers, treasure synergy, and that's helpful because, you know, Sauron is 6 mana, starts at 6, and he's kind of important for the deck, so we want to get him out early. We want to make sure we have ample resources to recast him if needed. The ward ability, of course, doesn't protect him from board wipes. And he's also, this is a 3-color deck, and treasure really helps you fix. I will not say this is a perfect mana base. It is decently strong by my standards. I've got fetches, but, or sorry, I don't think I have fetches. I've got, what do you call them? Shock lands, but no fetches. There's kind of a cave sub theme here, just because, the hidden caves that do discover stuff kind of fit, so I just decided to run with it. I had a lot of cave cards from caves. What I love about land themes in Commander is you can kind of slide them in anywhere. Like, if you want to do desert stuff or caves or the others, Locus or Urza's or whatever, you can kind of just fit it into, you know, or if there's some, like, synergy, land synergies, like Field of the Dead or whatever, you can kind of just put it in the deck regardless of what that deck is doing. It's very modular that way. Let's see. Also, a little bit of evasion for the army and some suspend silliness. But yeah, a good amount of cascade and discover. you know, you, even if you, even if you don't get ramped up with hitting people with armies and the ring tempting you, and then you, like, discarding and drawing four, you can still do some pretty neat stuff just by, like, you know, you cast, what's a good one? Like, Rain and Riches is a good cascade spell, but, like, you cast, wow. Where do I have them? Oh, yeah, like Bituminous Blast. You know, you kill something, and then you zoom through your deck, and you get, you know, Hidetsugu Devouring Chaos or something. That's neat. That's pretty cool. And we've also got, like, Dream Devourer gives all your cards in hand. Foretell lets you foretell them, which is another way to cast things from exile. There's kind of like a nascent demon, devil, orc kind of theme going on here. But I have not capitalized on that specifically. It's possible that Raphael, Fiendish Savior, could make it in to just kind of buff the random demons and devils I have. But for right now, no. And then last deck for right now, I actually built this in the last month, 6 weeks, since the release of Outlaws of Thunder Dungeon, and it is a deck I call Boom Headshot. Ty Joaquin Perfect Shot is the commander, and Ty Joaquin is just 2 mana, red and white, for a 2/3 human mercenary. Whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to a creature equal to the creature's toughness, draw a card, and you can pay X and tap Ty for, if a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a permanent or player this turn, it deals that much damage plus X instead. So you just raise any source of damage by X if you want. I know most people have kind of built around that ability of hers, but the first one is also really great. Helps you kind of set up in the early game. I call getting damage equal to toughness a headshot. And say, you know, you have a 3 toughness creature you're trying to deal with, and you lightning bolt it. You know, boom, headshot, you draw a card. There's a variety of burn spells here at different values, and there's also a lot that, you know, start at 1 and can easily be upgraded. So, for instance, Electricery, you certainly could cast it for 1 to ping something and kill it. You could play the Overload for 1 in a red to deal 1 damage to all creatures you don't control. In all likelihood, you're going to draw a couple cards off of that. And then from Ty Joaquin. And, of course, you can also Overload Electricery and pay X into Ty's ability to raise that damage to, like, 4, you know, or something. So that becomes more of a serious board wipe. There are a lot of kind of small incidental board wipes in the deck, like Electricery is a good one. Fear, Fire, Foes from Lord of the Rings is an X spell that deals X to a target and 1 to each other creature with the same controller. Hazardous Blast deals 1 to all creatures you don't control and stops them from blocking for the turn. And we've got Scouring Sands, Smash to Dust, Tectonic Hazard, Mizium Mortars, all of these, Earthquake, all of these are capable of doing kind of, you know, chip damage or damage that you can raise at will with Ty Joaquin, to kill or to draw cards, whatever is kind of in your need at the moment. This is also a goblin type old deck, so I have not a ton of creatures, but I've got like some goblins that do burn, like Gempalm Incinerator, Gutter Snipe, Pashalik Mons, Siege Gang Commander, and Skirk Fire Marshal. And also some goblins like Krenko Mob Boss that tap to double the number of goblins you control. There's some enchantments in the deck that do like ping for very common events like Impact Tremors pings, each opponent whenever you have a creature enter the battlefield. If you are able, I've won a game, one of the first games I played with this deck, actually. I won a game by tapping Krenko. I think I had like three, I untapped with Krenko and like two other goblins. I had Impact Tremors down, so that was my opponent's first mistake, probably. But I untapped with Krenko. I tapped him. Oh, I put like eight mana into Taiwa Keen. That was the other thing. Important. And then I tapped Krenko. I made three goblin tokens. Three creatures enter the battlefield, triggers Impact Tremors thrice. Impact Tremors goes from one up to nine because I put eight into Taiwa Keen's ability. So that's 27 damage a pop. Or, I mean, 9 damage a pop, 27 altogether to each opponent. I won that game that way. Also got, like, Pyrohemia, Raid Bombardment, Boggart Shenanigans, which pings on Goblins Dying, and good old Goblin Bombardment as well. So lots of ways that we can kind of figure out, like, an easy, like, you know, recurring source of ping on our opponents and boost that to the heavens. Also some nice X spells like Earthquake, Jaya's Immolating Inferno to close out the game as well. So yeah, that's the deck as it stands right now. I'm kind of like, you know, it's a different kind of burn deck because usually you just want to like burn as big as possible, like use as many doublers and stuff as you can. Or you want to use, like New Judith from Murders at Karlov Manor. New Judith can give an instant or sorcery spell, Death Touch, and Lifelink. Probably you want to do, like, Electricery and stuff like that. Just ping everything. That kills everything. Or, you know, maybe do a ton of damage, like Blasphemous Act. Still kills everything, but now you gain a ton of life. But there's kind of no in-between. And this, there's like some neat finesse in figuring out which burn spell in your hand is right for each job. And kind of letting the amount of damage that spell is going to do, plus what you have available to put into Taiwa Keen's pump ability, to kind of nail that headshot and keep your hand full. This is a Boros deck with a lot of lands and a lot of ramp. And I enjoy it quite a bit so far. But yeah, so that, I think I'll end it there. Those are my current decks. I haven't even gotten into some of the other silliness I've got going on, like, like anime girl, pilot tokens my friend Brad gave me for Shorakai, or like the way that I will obsessively like find an art card that feels like it captures the vibe of the deck and sleeve it behind the commander, so like face down you've got this interesting like kind of art like cover for the deck, or the way that I select all my basic lands individually for each deck. I am nuts about this stuff. I think about it a lot. But yeah, so that's all I got for today. Maybe next time I will touch on how I, or some commander decks that I've had in the past that are no longer, that have been retired for whatever reason, and maybe why those fell by the wayside. Or also maybe get into some theory crafting or deck brewing ideas that I've had rattling around. But anyway, this episode has gone on very long already. Thank you guys so much if you've stuck around this far. Once again, thank you to Scott Suter for the intro and outro themes. Find him on SoundCloud at Scott Suter, or Instagram or TikTok at Copenhagen Cool Ranch. Find me online at www.letmeexplainyouathing.com. You can submit topic requests for me there. I love to see them. And yeah, otherwise, hope you guys have a great day. Really appreciate your listenership. And if you're falling asleep, I hope you've enjoyed this white noise. Take care, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.